Hello, it's Debbie back again with the e-edition of the Decatur Herald and Review reading on Wednesday, May. It's not May anything. It is July. Reading on Wednesday, July 27th, 2016. Let's start with a positive thing. High school students make big breakthrough. Research, high school students further cancer treatment work at Millikan. This is by Teresa Churchill, who is a senior writer for the Herald and Review. Decatur, recalling the scientific breakthrough they made earlier this month, David Bruns, 16, of Rosemont, and Connor Dickey, 15, of Decatur, acted like it was just another day. Let's read that again. David Bruns, 16, of Rosemont, and Connor Dickey, 15, of Decatur, acted as like it was just another day in the lab. They had trouble expressing how they felt about designing particles capable of releasing a cancer drug when heated, even though that was exactly where last summer's research bogged down. They'd only been working on it not quite 6 weeks, Anne Rammelsberg, an associate professor of chemistry at Millikan University, offered by way of explanation. For me, it'd been like years. The two high school students, David, a senior who is homeschooled, and Connor, who's a junior at MacArthur High School, are this year's fellows in the American Chemical Society's Project SEED, that's an acronym apparently, S-E-E-D, SEED Summer Research Program. In its second year at Millikan, the program received $4,250 from the Society, and the Decatur Springfield's ACS chapter kicked in another $750 so the students could receive a $2,500 stipend for their work. The pair started June 6th and picked up where others had left off, trying to create hollow nanoparticles that, when embedded in the membrane of a faux cell, would shrink enough when heated to allow the dye inside to escape. Millikan University has been researching an alternative drug delivery system capable of destroying cancer without harming healthy tissue. Rammelsberg said the next step is to replace the dye inside the fake cell with the actual drug, an extremely toxic one called cantharidin, to see how well it's released once injected into a tumor. David was spending part of his time working on techniques requiring nothing more than body heat to release the drug, while Connor was looking at different laser settings and the results it produced. The pair, who will wrap up their work August 5th, have been assisted by Millikan students serving as mentors. They are Ciara Cortez, a senior biology major from Chicago, Cherise Hamp, a senior chemistry major from Chicago, Mason Jett, a junior biology major from Hoopston, and Justin Thrall, a senior chemistry major from Plainfield. Hamp said she's not only picked up new strategy for helping younger students, but also has been reminded that she can learn from them, too. Added Cortez, they're well-rounded, enthusiastic students. Connor and David acknowledge that being part of the Project SEED research has been a learning experience. I always thought with research you come up with an original idea, David said, but you can continue on with someone else's research and maybe add your own little twist. End of that article. To national news, Clinton wins nomination, emotional boost from husband. This is by Julie Pace and Catherine Lucy from AP. Philadelphia, AP, taking on the role of devoted political spouse, former President Bill Clinton, declared his wife Hillary Clinton an impassioned change maker, serving as character witness for her on the night she triumphantly became the first woman nominated for president. She's been worth every single year she's put into making people's lives better, he said of his partner of more than 40 years, and the Democratic Party's new standard bearer in the race for the White House. For a man more accustomed to delivering policy-packed stem winders, Clinton's deeply personal address underscored the historic night for Democrats and the nation. If she wins in November, the Clintons would also be the first married couple to each have served as president. She will take on Donald Trump, who won the Republican nomination a week ago. Trump, who campaigned Tuesday in North Carolina, mocked the former president's speech in advance, calling him overrated. Referring to Trump, though not by name, Clinton said there are real and affordable solutions to problems facing the nation, but we won't get them if America makes the wrong choice. The former president traced his relationship with his wife back more than 40 years, recalling in great detail the first time he spotted her on campus and the impact she had on pushing him into politics. "Hillary opened my eyes to a whole new world of public service by private citizens," he said, addressing a convention hall packed to the rafters with delegates listening raptly. He closed the second night of the Democratic convention, a jubilant celebration of Hillary Clinton's formal nomination for president. In an important move for the party unity, her primary rival, Bernie Sanders, helped make it official when the roll call got to his home state of Vermont, prompting delegates to erupt in cheers. It was a striking parallel to the role Clinton played 8 years ago when she stepped to the microphone on the convention floor in Denver in support of her former rival, Barack Obama. This time, Clinton shattered the glass ceiling she couldn't crack in 2008. She leads a party still grappling with divisions. Moments after Clinton claimed the nomination, a group of Sanders supporters left the convention and headed to a media tent to protest what they said was their being shut out of the party. At the same time, protesters who'd spent the day marching in the hot sun began facing off with police. Trump cheered the disruptions from the campaign trail. In North Carolina, he told the Convention of the Veterans of Foreign Wars that our politicians have totally failed you. Indeed, Clinton's long political resume, Secretary of State, Senator, First Lady, has sometimes seemed an odd fit for an electorate deeply frustrated with Washington and eager to rally around unconventional candidates like Trump and Sanders. Many voters have questions about her character and trustworthiness, suggesting her years in power give her the impression she can play by different rules. President Clinton spoke after 3 hours of testimonials from lawmakers, advocates, celebrities, and citizens who argued otherwise. Each took the stage to vouch for Clinton's commitment to working on health care, children's issues, and gun control. "Hillary Clinton has the passion and understanding to support grieving mothers," said Sabrina Fulton, whose son Trayvon Martin was killed in 2012. "She has the courage to lead the fight for common sense gun legislation." The significant time devoted to the character testimonials underscored the campaign's concerns about how voters view Clinton. Public polls consistently show that a majority of Americans don't believe she's honest and trustworthy. That perception that was reinforced after the FBI director's scathing assessment of her controversial email use as Secretary of State, even though the Justice Department did not pursue charges. President Clinton complicated the email controversy last month when he met with Attorney General Loretta Lynch in the midst of the FBI investigation. Republicans cast the meeting as a sign that the Clintons play by different rules, while Democrats bemoaned that at the very least left that impression. The former president has campaigned frequently for his wife during the White House race, but mostly in smaller cities and towns, part of an effort by the campaign to keep him in a more behind-the-scenes role. His convention address was his highest-profile appearance of the campaign. Clinton's landmark achievement saturated the roll call with emotion and symbols of women's long struggle to break through political barriers. Jerry Emmett, a 102-year-old woman born before women had the right to vote, cast the ballots for Arizona. Martha McKinney, a Clinton delegate from Maryland, said the night felt like a celebration for Sanders' campaign as well as Clinton's. She added, "The idea I'm going to be here when the first woman president is nominated is overwhelming." The Democratic convention drew the party's biggest stars to swelter Philadelphia for a week-long event. On Monday night, First Lady Michelle Obama made an impassioned case for Clinton as the only candidate in the presidential race worthy of being a role model for a nation's children. President Barack Obama and Vice President Joe Biden will speak Wednesday along with Virginia Senator Tim Kaine, Clinton's new running mate. End of that article. Continuing on the front page, numbers tell dark cat tale. This is local. Caterpillar continues struggle in second quarter. This is by Tony Reed, a staff writer for H&R. Peoria, take a quick drive through the Caterpillar Inc.'s 2016 second quarter numbers, and the results look pretty good. Profit per share of $1.09 beat Wall Street estimates by a solid 13 cents, while sales and revenues of $10.3 billion bested Street expectations by $280 million. But the devil's in the details, and it's clear all Peoria-based Caterpillar knows these days are sad songs. That $1.09 per share figure dropped to 93 cents per share when layoff and other restructuring costs are added in, compared to 131 in the 2015 second quarter after restructuring costs back then. And the latest second quarter sales and revenues of $10.3 billion were off 16% from the $12.3 billion achieved at this time last year. Faced with sales on a downward plunge that is dragging deep into an unprecedented fourth year, Caterpillar sent warning signals that its coping strategy will continue to be more layoffs. Restructuring costs in 2016, which were expected to be about $550 million, are now forecast to be about $700 million, or 80 cents per share, Caterpillar said in a statement accompanying Tuesday's results release. Additional workforce reductions expected in the second half of 2016 are the primary reason for the increase in restructuring costs. Caterpillar's global workforce numbers fell by almost 14,000 employees in the past 12 months, dropping from 126,800 in June 2015 to 112,900 in June 2016. The number of U.S. workers fell by 7,500, and a total of 6,400 non-U.S. employees were cut from the payrolls. Digging deeper into the 2016 second quarter results, it's clear Caterpillar's Resource Industries division, which includes the giant off-road dump truck and the other gear built indicator and sold mainly to mining firms, continues to struggle. The division's sale came in at $1.457 billion, off $591 million, or 29% from the 2015 second quarter. Operating profit based on the latest numbers drove off of a cliff. The final result was a loss of $163 million, or 704%. Commenting on the numbers, Caterpillar told industry analysts it saw little prospect of better news anytime soon. The sales decrease was primarily due to lower end user demand across all regions, the company said. While commodity prices have improved from their recent lows, it's not clear at this time if the current prices are sufficient to drive increased demand for equipment. Mining customers continued to focus on improving productivity in existing mines and reducing their total capital expenditures, as they have for several years. As a result, sales and new orders in Resource Industries continued to be weak. Company-wide, Caterpillar is now reining in its 2016 sales and profits outlook as it looks out at a world economy it describes as uncertain and where economic risks have persisted. It now expects sales and revenues to be in the range of $40 billion to $40.5 billion, down from a previous projection of $40 billion to $42 billion. The revised profit per share forecast is now pegged at $3.55, dropping to $2.75 with restructuring costs. The previous numbers were $3.70 and $3, respectively. Commenting on the 2016 second quarter results, Caterpillar Chairman and CEO Doug Oberhelman said he was happy that his company's strategy of slashing costs to limit the drop in the profits was working. I'm pleased with our financial performance and focus on our long-term strategy, given the difficult and economic and industry environment we're facing, Oberhelman added. Our goal when sales decrease is to lower costs so the decline in operating profit is no more than 25 to 30% of the decline in sales and revenue. Although signaling clearly that more layoffs are coming, Oberhelman said high praise for the Caterpillar workers who survive. Amid these very challenging market conditions, our balance sheet remains strong and our employees are delivering better performance on everything from safety, quality, and cost management to machine market position, he said. I'm inspired by our people, as they are the primary reason we're weathering this downturn as successfully as we are. One area where even the corporate leadership is feeling the pinch is incentive bonuses. Those dropped to $85 million in the 2016 second quarter compared to $200 million at this time last year. For all of 2016, the outlook for the total of short-term incentive pay is $410 million, down from the $585 $5 million earned in 2015. Caterpillar Incorporated Inc.'s finished Tuesday at $82.75, up $4.06, or 5.16%. End of that article. To the last article on the front page of the print paper, and a sad one. This is national. Deaths of kids in hot cars prompt pleas to parents. This is by Jamie Stengel and an AP writer, Dallas. The deaths of four children in hot cars in recent days has brought the number across the U.S. this year to at least 23, nearly matching the total for all of last year, and prompting experts to plead for vigilance and warn parents it can happen to anyone. It just breaks your heart, said Jeanette Fennell, founder and president of KidsInCars.org, a national child safety nonprofit based in Philadelphia. We've done so much to try to get the word out, and maybe that's why last year was down a bit, but this year is not looking very good. Four-year-old Samaria Maltia died on Friday in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, after her caregiver drove to work instead of taking her to daycare. In Dallas, two-year-old boy Lei Sang died after being left in a hot car in a parking lot Sunday while his family was in church. Fennell, whose organization tracks such deaths, said the number began dramatically rising in the 1990s with the passing of laws requiring that young children be placed in the back seat to avoid airbag injuries. The problem is, when you're out of sight, you can be out of mind, said Fennell, adding that the infant and toddler seats now are rear-facing. The numbers of heat stroke deaths of kids in cars fluctuated in the following decades, averaging 37 such deaths a year since 1998. Last year, with about two dozen deaths, was an unusually low year. The worst was 2010 with 49, according to an account by Fennell and Jan Null, a research meteorologist at San Jose State University who also tracks numbers. Not surprisingly, states with warm climates all year and large populations had the most hot car deaths since 1990. Fennell said there have been 111 hot car deaths in Texas, followed by Florida with 80 and California at 54. The temperature inside a parked car on a 90-degree day will reach 119 degrees in 20 minutes and 133 degrees after an hour. Parents should get into the habit of always opening their back doors when they leave the vehicle. According to Fennell, leaving a purse or cell phone in the back seat can help. Other strategies include keeping a stuffed animal in the car seat and placing it in the front seat when the child's strapped in as a reminder the kid's there. Parents also need to make sure their daycare calls them if the child doesn't show up, she said. It happens to the very best of parents, Fennell said. Sleep-deprived parents become distracted because of a change in routine or thinking about what needs to be done at work. It's going to take technology to startle someone out of autopilot. In an industry first, General Motors will have as a standard feature in their 2017 GMC Acadia SUV a system that monitors its rear doors to remind drivers who have just parked to check their rear seats if they've opened up rear doors at the start of their trip. She also noted there's a child seat for sale that alerts the driver if they're leaving the car and the child's seat's still buckled. But Null said he doesn't believe technology is a panacea, noting that even if new cars were required to have reminder systems, it would be a slow process for everyone to get that new of a vehicle. It would be a help, but the biggest thing is education and awareness, Null said, noting his analysis show about 30% of the deaths are results of kids getting into unlocked cars on their own. End of that. Continuing, government and politics. Rauner renews term limits calls. This is by Dan Petrella, the Springfield Bureau Chief for Herald and Review. Auburn. Although the issue won't be on the November 8th ballot, Republicans are making term limits part of their pitch to voters in races for the Illinois General Assembly. Governor Bruce Rauner launched the effort Monday in Chicago and is on a two-day tour of the state to promote the idea, which he wants the General Assembly to vote on during the fall veto session. Given opposition from House Speaker Michael Madigan, Democrat, Chicago, it's unlikely that a proposed amendment to the Illinois Constitution limiting officials' time in office would muster enough support in the Democratic-controlled House and Senate to be put to voters. Even if it did earn the 3/5 majority needed in each chamber, voters won't weigh in until 2018. Speaking from a flatbed trailer to a crowd of supporters gathered Tuesday at Niemeyer's Circle, North Farms in Niemeyer's Circle N Farms in Auburn, about 15 miles south of Springfield. Rahner noted that nearly 80% of voters support term limits, a figure supported by a poll from the Paul Simon Public Policy. I'm going to stop here. My print is goofy. A figure supported by a poll from the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University. He decried court decisions that have blocked referendums on term limits and legislative redistricting reform from the ballot. Cook County judges have ruled on multiple occasions, most recently last week in a case on redistricting, that those efforts have gone beyond the scope allowed for petition-driven initiatives. That's why lawmakers need to act, Rahner said. Speaking to reporters afterward, Rahner dismissed questions about his own ambitions for re-election in 2018, saying, "For me, the election is years away, and I'm not focused on that at all. However, well, it will be at least that long before voters can have their say on term limits." Rahner said lawmakers must address the issue now. "Time is clicking," he said. "We need to send a message. We have to change the culture. When we get this passed, the people of Illinois will have made their voices heard." State Representative Avery Byrne, Republican Raymond, who's running for the seat she was appointed to in 2015, joined the governor in Auburn and voiced her support for term limits. "We've seen what happens when we don't have government reforms," Byrne said. "We have this long budget stalemate. We have sides who won't speak to each other. We have really entrenched interests who aren't being responsive to what our constituents are being asked for what our constituents are asking for. Enacting term limits isn't an issue on which Byrne will be able to distinguish herself from her opponent, however." Democrat Mike Mathis of Gillespie, the former Macoupin County Circuit Court, also favors them. "I listen to what the constituents say," Mathis said. "I think it's clear that most people would like term limits." Byrne isn't exactly the only Republican campaigning on the issue. Shortly after Rahner's Monday news conference, Dave Severin of Benton, who's challenging State Representative John Bradley, Democrat Marion, and Paul Schimpf of Waterloo, who's running against Democrat Sheila Simon of Carbondale for an open state Senate seat, issued statements supporting the governor's effort. "Term limits will help put an end to the stranglehold that career politicians have on our state," Schimpf said. Simon said she generally doesn't support term limits because "I think that in some ways they take choices away from the voters." She noted she's running to replace the state Senator Dave Luchterfeld, Republican Oakville, who's retiring after more than 20 years in office. The former lieutenant governor said she supports term limits for legislative leaders because voters don't get a say in their election. That's the end of that article. Recreation. Bring the fun. Star Wars Camp does. Awakening a creative force within, says one of the headlines. Park District hosts youngsters for Camp of Star Wars Fun. A Camp of Star Wars Fun. Allison Petty from the Herald and Review writes this. Decatur. Long time ago, Tuesday, in a galaxy far away, the Poage Arts and Recreation Center, a group of young Padawans gathered for a day of activities, perhaps even more fun than Jedi training. Star Wars Camp, offered for the first time this year by the Decatur Park District, drew a full house of 24 children between the ages of 7 and 14. Many of whom were new to Park District arts programs. They made stormtrooper helmets by spray painting milk jugs, drew Star Wars themed designs on t-shirts, performed skits about their favorite characters, watched Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope, and even battled with lightsabers, sort of. "We created lightsabers out of pool noodles so that everyone would be on the same playing field," said Tammy Robinson, cultural arts supervisor. Most participants had seen at least a few of the movies, and many were wearing Star Wars shirts. Drew Newton, 9, brought a stormtrooper costume, an homage to his favorite characters. His older brother, 12-year-old Will, prefers Han Solo. "I like all the cool sounds and special effects in the sword fighting because I really like sword fighting," Will said, while coloring a t-shirt that depicted his idea for a new Star Wars story in which he is the central character who has magic. Lamar Williams, 7, wore his light-up R2-D2 shoes on Tuesday. The iconic droid from the original movies and BB-8, the chirping spherical droid from the most recent movies, are his favorites. Though she was wearing a t-shirt featuring Rey, the female lead from Star Wars The Force Awakens, Maren Steele wasn't sure about her favorite character because she likes all of them. Her friend McKenna Marshall, 8, finds the stories of Anakin and Luke Skywalker to be particularly compelling. Both girls thought it'd be cool to be able to use the Force. McKenna said she'd use it to talk some sense into her younger brother and sister when they behave rambunctiously. But I would never choke anyone, she asserted in response to another child's suggestion. Maren, on the other hand, would employ her powers to communicate with distant family. I would send notes from my hand to my cousins in Oswego, she said. End of the article. We'll close out, I think, this section one for July 27th with local briefs for Wednesday, July 27th. Lincoln, fatal accident. A 22-year-old man from Lincoln was killed early Tuesday morning after a three-vehicle accident on Interstate 55 north. On Interstate 55 south of the city, Nathan Gunterman was driving north in the southbound lanes of I-55 at 2:17 a.m. when he struck the left side of a southbound vehicle, according to a preliminary traffic crash report from the Illinois State Police. After hitting the vehicle, Gunterman's vehicle continued north where it struck the front of another vehicle. Gunterman was pronounced dead shortly after the crash. The condition of the drivers and passenger in the other two vehicles was not available. The state police are investigating the crash. Decatur, Reasonable Service. Reasonable Service will host a free event including live music, water games, food, and much more 2 p.m. Saturday, July 30th at 321 East Leafland Avenue. Steps Dance Complex will perform and the sweatshop will lead Zumba and bodywork. For more information, call 330-8321. 330-8321. Decatur, man, woman jailed. Decatur police say an ex-boyfriend and ex-girlfriend got into an argument on who was going to watch their child and ended up physically assaulting each other Saturday evening. Sworn statements said Decatur patrol officers arrested the 21-year-old former boyfriend who was booked on a charge of domestic battery after he allegedly punched his ex-girlfriend to 2 years in the face 3 times during the altercation. The woman, 26, was booked on a charge of committing domestic battery while having a previous conviction for the same offense. She allegedly shoved her ex-boyfriend and hit and left 5-inch scratches on his arm and neck. Next, Decatur, forgery alleged. A former employee of a Decatur masonry firm has been accused of forging 9 checks on the company account and stealing almost $2,000. The Macon County Sheriff's Office said the 26-year-old suspect wrote the checks from the account of Brickback Masonry between June 16th and July 20th. The ex-employee was arrested Monday and booked on a charge of forgery. Continuing in this vein, a crime in courts, man accused of repeatedly beating his girlfriend, Tony Reed, from the staff writer. A Decatur man is accused of beating his girlfriend, chasing her out of their house into a neighbor's home where he kicked down the front door and continued the assault. Dion T. Rivera, 22, is now being held in the Macon County Jail on home charges of home invasion and domestic battery. His bond has been set at $40,000. If he makes bail, he's ordered to stay away from his girlfriend, with whom he has a child, and their home. Another court case. Woman strangled, eye socket broken during assault. Carlos L. Hogan, a 27-year-old Decatur man, was arraigned Tuesday on 4 felony counts for allegedly strangling a woman and punching her in the face, fracturing her eye socket. At the time of this incident, Hogan was serving a term of conditional discharge, a lesser form of probation, for battering the same victim in December. The victim, a woman in her 20s, told police that about 2:30 a.m. Saturday, Hogan punched her in the face multiple times with a closed fist, causing her left eye to be swollen shut. He intentionally impeded the airway of the victim by strangling her with his left hand around her throat. The officer stayed with the victim at Decatur Memorial Hospital until a physician assessed her injuries. That is the end of our reading for part one on Wednesday, July 27th. Talk to you soon. This is Debbie signing off.